Hello and welcome to today's podcast on the interactions of politics and social media. I will be the host. My name is Trent Lupton, and I'm going to go around and introduce our group. Who wants to start?
I'm Alexis Marstiller, and I'm a business major.
Daniel DeMarkey, math and computer science.
Danielle Crookton, history and English.
I'm Akta Deshmukh, and I'm majoring in economics and statistics.
Awesome. Okay, so to get our conversation started, we're going to talk about campaigns and how the how social media is used with campaigning. So, Ekka, how do you think that politicians use social media to get their message out?
Well, so in general, we, all of us, take in a lot of information through our phones every day, and namely it's through social media. We just don't realize it. A lot of the time, politicians will use social media, their social media platforms, to get their information out there, say what they stand for, what their platform is about. A lot of campaign managers will also have like official accounts for these people, just to regulate what information is being put out there, regulating the comment section, making sure everything seems perfect for this politician. And a lot of people will actually think that it's targeting young people because it's on social media, but what they don't realize is that Facebook is actually a pretty common space for middle-aged adults, and so this is a way that they can also target not just the younger voters, but also the older ones. And it's just an avenue for them to explain their events.
Yeah, I definitely think it's a very quick way to be able to reach people with the hit of a button. We can reach thousands, if not millions.
Yeah, and what ABC News was saying was that Trump actually is able to get all his information out there in just a few minutes. He can send out a tweet saying that he supports whoever was just on the news, or he can say, "Oh, this person was spreading lies about me," or whatever, and a lot of the time people will just take what he says at face value, and it's just a great way for him to keep his side of the argument at the forefront of everyone's minds, and you kind of shut out other sides.
And even with people who don't follow those politicians on social media, there's still people who do and can retweet and repost, and so that spreads the information so quickly,
mm-hmm.
And so all of that information gets out there very fast.
So you would argue that, you know, it's not just the speed that you can spread it, it's also that people perceive it as like more direct and honest, because it's not like, you know, you don't have some newscaster interjecting their opinion, like this is directly from the politician in question.
Yeah, and a lot of the time, like, if the politician himself or herself is saying it, it just makes them seem more personable. Like a politician can post on Sunday, "Oh, I went to church with my family, then we went for a picnic," and it's just something that people like to see. People like to see that their politicians are also just regular, relatable people, and then later on in the day, the same politician could post something about his or her platform, and it just reinforces that whole like support for that. And I think it also just keeps people interested. Social media just has this addictive quality about it, and if you want your voters and your followers to be engaged with you, social media is probably the strongest way to go.
Right, I agree. So we've heard a lot of the pros associated with politicians using social media. What do we think some of the cons are? Because not everything going along with politicians on social media is good.
Kind of going off what you just said, it builds that personal connection. So I think a lot of times one of the big cons is when people find out negative things about the politician, or somebody that says that they don't agree with that politician, they feel themselves personally attacked because they have that personal connection to that politician. The whole, "I go to church on Sunday," "Oh, I had dinner with my family," people can relate to that. So in a way, they almost see themselves in that person, and I think that can be dangerous.
Yeah. I also think how politicians like handle it. Like, you can handle like using your social media in a professional manner, but we've also seen examples of it not being handled in a professional manner. And so then it steps away from it being like a useful tool for the politicians to being something that's hurtful. Like, when we see a politician that makes a comment that's like unfactual or like blatantly like untrue, it just takes away their credibility. And for that, like, politicians can be harmed by these social media platforms.
And that goes into the whole topic of, does this actually have substance? a lot of the time campaign managers are putting millions of dollars into this entire campaign just to get the voters that are kind of on the fence. And if, you know, social media, if your posts don't have that much substance, how much can you really convince someone of your argument if they've already made up their mind? And social media is a cheap and easy way, but at the same time, the politician at the end of the day can say whatever they want to say. And if what they're saying isn't really helping their campaign, then there is a big part of just losing substance and losing ground and losing voters.
Yeah, there's no filter to be like, this is a bad idea, don't post this.
Mm-hmm.
There is no campaign manager running that. As we can see with like Donald Trump's tweets, he tweets whatever is on his mind, and sometimes it's not the greatest thing to be seeing from our president. So I think that's a big danger, that there is no filter when it comes to this.
Right, absolutely. And with these politicians posting things, and some people respond positively to it and some people not so much. A lot of people don't like Donald Trump's Twitter account, for instance. We see the creation of online communities. And so what do we think? Do we think that the internet is causing political polarization anyway?
Yeah, I want to like extend that question to y'all. Like, do you think internet as a whole, not looking specifically at like any specific social media or any forums, just like as a whole, do you think it is what's causing this political polarization that we're seeing today?
Probably.
Personally, I think absolutely. I think that you have people that choose who they follow and what they're going to follow and decide, I'm only going to follow this because you can shut out what you don't want to see. And then you have all of these ideas that you agree with that are just constantly coming in and just like reinforcing your own opinion. And then it makes you more like shut off to other opinions. And so I think it's dangerous to have communities that are secluded and talk with just each other about what they agree on. But social media does have the potential to interact with other groups that have different ideas. It's just that I don't think people really use it in that way.
Yeah. Like, I feel like when we think about the subject, we always think that, oh, the internet is causing all these like polarizations. But we, from the study that was done in Brown University, we can't really conclude this. They had said that in both young and older generations, polarization has been seen, like it's definitely happening. And because we can see it in the older generation, like our grandparents, like not like our parents, but like our grandparents are also becoming polarized. We can see that in the young community too. We can't chalk it up to just the internet because the older community doesn't really use internet as much as we do. So we can't say it's the internet's causing this polarization when people that have limited access to it are also becoming polarized. And so, looking more specifically at these online communities, like a hashtag on Instagram or a forum on Reddit, these like small communities that create these like knit, like close people that talk about similar subjects, we always think that because of this, it's causing these polarizations. But there was a study at Duke University that ruled this out completely. We would like to think that, but it's not really true. It's actually the opposite, that exposure to viewpoints that you don't agree with tends to make people more polarized. And I have a quote from the analysis of that study, and it reads, "Hundreds of Democrats and Republicans who were active on Twitter followed a Twitter bot that retweeted content from the opposing side. After a month of exposure, the Democrats retained about the same attitudes towards politics. But the Republicans ended up more conservative. So this means polarization could be driven by exposure to views people disagree with rather than being separated from them." And so by this, we can see how people that are seeing comments that they don't agree with affects them more than just being surrounded by comments that they do agree with. So it's like, yeah.
Oh, I was just gonna say, so the whole thesis of this is that we've gotten it backwards. People join these communities because they were already polarized, rather than joining these communities makes them polarized.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, when I think about this, it's like, I'm trying to wrap my head around this, like as to how this could create the polarization. And when I think about it, I'm like, well, maybe when people see a comment that they don't agree with, it makes them maybe more angry, it makes them believe more strongly in their own opinion, and this is what's causing the polarization. And from the study, that's what it's saying, but how do y'all feel? Like why do y'all think that seeing opposing views can make someone more polarized?
I think one of the big problems with that is a lot of times our views, we kind of associate them as our values and as a part of us, a part of our identity, a part of who we are. So when somebody challenges it or disagrees with it, we feel like they're not disagreeing with the policy or the view, they're disagreeing or attacking us personally. And so I think that's probably a major problem with it.
Yeah, I agree.
I think also the fact that you're behind a phone screen or a computer screen, and so you can kind of just enhance your values and whatever language you're using may be more strong than what you would normally say if you were talking to someone like face to face. So I think that like if you see something that's really strongly worded, well, you're gonna hit back with an even more strong message.
Yeah.
You may also go look for a source that contradicts that, and you know, I mean, hypothetically, if it's true, I mean, for instance, there may, you know, be something that was very damaging to a Democrat, very damaging to a Republican, and so if you're, you know, your first gut instinct is, well, that can't be right, I have to find something that disproves that, then you may go looking and you may find something, and it may be true or it may be, you know, not true, but regardless, like, you're probably going to, you know, find a source that confirms what you believe and trust that source rather than the one that is, you know, attacking your beliefs.
Yeah, I actually have a question. So do you think confirmation bias plays any role in this, where they're already polarized, they go to these communities and everybody's like, yeah, you're right. Do you think that might increase that?
I think it could. I don't think we can say that, like, the bubbles have no, like, say in causing this polarization, but it's just the fact that it's not as much as seeing the opposing viewpoints.
And I think that's a good segue into our third point. We're going to talk some about fake news, which has been mentioned a lot, especially since the 2016 presidential election. Some research that I've found has shown that, according to the Pew Research Center, nearly 80% of people under 50 years old get news from social media in some way every week. And an MIT study found that false news stories are 70% more likely to spread on Twitter than real ones. So there's a lot of fake stories out there that are circulating, and they circulate rather quickly. And how do we think this ties in with campaigns and with politics on social media?
Well, I think it goes back to all, like, social media platforms being really interesting and addictive and engaging with whoever uses it. And I think if people want to spread, you know, some message, they're going to focus on whatever is more interesting and not necessarily do some fact-checking themselves. They're not going to go find more information on the topic that they're reading about just because they may not have time, they may not know that that's what they should be doing. They're just going to think that spreading the most interesting hot topic message is probably what everyone else is doing, so they're just going to hop on the bandwagon.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it's incredibly easy to spread false stories on Facebook. It's become more difficult, but it has been very easy. For instance, I found that you can purchase a Google advertisement for 24 hours that will reach at least 8,000 people for only $3, and then you can specifically define that to a certain geographical region, and you can target certain like things that profiles have liked or what they follow on Facebook to just further like define the group that you're targeting. And so it's really easy, for instance, if you wanted to target a group that would probably be conservative leaning Republican party members, and you could send them something that would reaffirm their beliefs and target them to a certain geographical area, and you're almost ensuring that they're going to see it and respond positively to it, which is pretty terrifying. Thankfully, Facebook and Google have created a lot of filters since 2016 to reduce fake news sites from doing that sort of advertising, but it's still a problem that exists.
Yeah, I think one big problem is the fact that people aren't actively looking for information that goes against what they believe. So when they see fake news stories that are positive when it comes to their beliefs, they're just gonna be like, aha, I knew it, and they're not gonna actively be seeking articles that disagree with them.
Right, and that's a big danger with targeted ads, because you're targeting people that you know are gonna see something that it's not they're searching for, but it just pops up there.
Yeah.
Well, and there's also the question of, like, you know, can we even police these platforms? I mean, you know, they're terabytes of data that are uploaded to these places every day. I mean, you know, Facebook actually has a small army of, you know, content moderators. And that's not anywhere near enough. It's still a problem. Like, the question is, you know, not just should we police these sites and, like, you know, should we combat fake news? Because I think most people would agree that the answer is yes, but it's can we? Like, with the way that these platforms are set up.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if we can. I feel like that would require a lot of manpower because just of the sheer amount of people that use these social media platforms.
I think a big issue is that, depending on how far you go into policing fake news sites, some people would argue that you might be infringing upon their freedom of speech online, because some people argue, well, this isn't really a fake story. This is my opinion. And so that's dangerous as well. So I'm going to go ahead and segue into the fourth point, which is data privacy. And I believe we have a video or an audio clip to play with that.
Yeah, just a quick introduction before we play that. A lot of people don't really understand just how much data privacy affects them. And so I brought in this clip because I wanted to show you just how much it can affect you.
And so if you run an analysis on your device, you can very quickly find out, and this is actually online, 50 applications accessing my contacts, 57 accessing my information 24/7, whether or not the app was actually being actively used.
So as you can hear from the clip that I brought in, we all have a lot of apps on our phone. Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Snapchat, a million different social media platforms that we all use. And these apps are actively tracking your likes, what you view, your contact information, all this other personal information that you have on your phone, and you don't even realize it's happening. You didn't give them permission, or you might have given them permission to. Nobody reads the 56-paged document talking about what rights you're giving away. And even then, I read in a different article that somebody had taken the Apple 56-page document that you click, yeah, I agree, to the terms and conditions, and they'd given it to a team of lawyers, and the lawyers went through it, read it, and they themselves couldn't figure out what privacy rights you were giving away. So I think if the average person is not going to be able to do that, if a team of lawyers can't, somebody that's been trained to do this. And one of the reasons why this is such a big topic right now is Cambridge Analytica. So what is Cambridge Analytica? Cambridge Analytica is this big 2016 political race scandal that occurred where this company, Cambridge Analytica, was getting information from millions of people's Facebook pages, their friends' Facebook pages, what they were liking, who was in their contacts, all this other information about them. And they got it because this guy, I think it was Cornell University, he created this app. And about 5,000 people signed up for it. They agreed. They said, yes, you can look at my stuff. It's fine. But the problem comes in when that app then went into those people's Facebooks and then accessed their friends' data. And then it spread, and they accessed their friends' data. And it kept going until they had, I think it was about 50 million people's data. And nobody gave them permission to do this except for the original 5,000. And then what happened is Cambridge Analytica then used this data and gave it to Trump, and then Trump's campaign then used it to target specific people. And it's honestly ridiculous because there's no laws in place to even regulate this. And so one of the big problems, in my personal opinion, is the fact that with Facebook and Google and Instagram, nobody's regulating it, and you are no longer a user with them. You're not a user, you're not a customer, you're not a person. You are you're a product. They sell you. They sell you to politicians. They sell you to advertisers. Google, you are worth about $200. Facebook, it's about $116. You're a product that's being sold. But thoughts?
Well, I mean, and also the interesting thing is, you know, you were saying unauthorized tracking. I mean, that's not just limited to, you know, apps you download. One of the interesting things about Facebook is, any page that has a Facebook like button on it, whether you're, you know, in incognito mode or not, like regardless of what you're doing, if the page has a Facebook like button on it, Facebook knows that somebody from your address went to that page and can associate that page visit with your Facebook account. So it's not even just things that you're doing on Facebook or that your friends are doing on Facebook. It's things that you're doing on Facebook across the entire internet, across all your devices, whether you think that you're being tracked or not.
Yeah, I mean, there's always that little joke that when an ad pops up after something you've talked about with some friends, and there's always that joke that, oh, like, my FBI agent's listening in, and, you know, somebody might be listening in. They might have access to your microphone, and they might be able to hear what you're saying or record what you're saying. And so when those ads pop up, yeah, it's kind of funny because you're like, oh, like, haha, I just talked about this. But I don't think people realize how scary that is.
Yeah, it sounds just kind of like crazy and all out there to say maybe they are listening in. But I mean, maybe they are, because they have a lot of data on us that we wouldn't really imagine to be possible. And also, just like, I think we mentioned this earlier, but how Facebook has access to a lot of things that aren't Facebook. You can download an app on your phone and it'll say sign in via Facebook. And then you have to do that, and all of a sudden you're linked back to your Facebook, even if it's just like a game download. So they track a lot of information that way, certainly.
And I think if politicians have access to this kind of information, then they know who they should be targeting. They know what the people favor, what they're not in favor of, and then they know how they need to align what they're saying with what the people want. And so then you don't necessarily know if what the politician is saying is what they're actually going to believe in, what they're actually going to do if and when they're in office. They're kind of just saying whatever they can to get you on their side, and then once they're in office, you don't know if they'll actually hold up their end of the bargain.
Yeah, and another thing that I found while researching this was, so Donald Trump campaign, they gathered all this data from Cambridge Analytica, they used it, and one big portion of the campaign tactics was that they targeted Hillary Clinton supporters. And when you hear that, you might think, oh, they probably sent negative information about her or negative ads targeted about her. But in reality, they were sending ads that were stating, she's going to win, it's fine, like, you don't need to vote. That was the message that they were sending across. So all of these people that were Hillary Clinton supporters, they didn't go vote because they didn't think they needed to. Because why would they? She was winning by so much. So I think one of the problems is we always assume that these ads that they're going to be sending are going to be negative. They're not. They could be essentially a wolf in sheep's clothing, hiding behind this idea of, we're going to push this idea that you don't need to go vote, you don't need to go do this, and in the end it benefits them. But government involvement is something that needs to happen, in my opinion. We've seen Facebook congressional hearings and other things, but do we even think they're actually going to implement any new policies or regulations? Because the politicians are the ones benefiting from this.
Right. Also, rather famously, you know, Zuckerberg was asked by a senator how Facebook even made money. There are people who are voting on these things who don't even understand Facebook's core business model. So that seems like a problem that question was even asked.
So we're going to wrap it up with our fifth and final point, and Daniel, I want to bring you in for this, just sort of how it all works together.
So that's actually an interesting, interesting question. I mean, we've been talking about a lot of these things and how effective they really are, but that's actually a very interesting question. I mean, first of all, you know, we think that in America we have a large number of people, about a third of the population, who are independents, but that's actually a lie, as it turns out. Independents are about as consistent in voting as people who actually identify as Democrats or Republicans. The number of, you know, true independents is actually minuscule. Furthermore, there's the point that a lot of these targeting things are actually not that effective. I mean, the problem is these algorithms still aren't very good. I mean, you can actually go and check who Google thinks you are. Google believes that I'm a 44-year-old man. Google thinks that I'm into a lot of things that I have no interest in and can't even imagine when I ever expressed an interest. The problem is there's actually a lot of debate on how effective this micro-targeting really is. I mean, you know, the rough statistic is that it's usually about 80% accurate, but every additional category that you tack on there means that it's, you know, more and more likely that one of those categories is going to be wrong, and that could be significant. And the final point is that actually, you know, this is mostly a money question. These campaigns have virtually unlimited money, and the thing is, there are almost no persuadable voters. In any given election, just about everybody is going to vote how they're going to vote and is going to turn out how they're going to turn out, and that's actually almost completely doesn't vary election to election. Most of this stuff is targeted at very, very small, you know, like 10% of likely voters, and it makes it very, very difficult to even measure if this is working. The thing is, campaigns have so much money that they might as well. So it's actually a pretty complicated topic.
I think it's also important, though, for a politician to have social media and all that, even if it may not sway a lot of voters, just to keep your name in the media, in just in daily conversation. You need to stay relevant, and I think a really good way to stay relevant is to keep posting on social media, to keep your name out there, to keep posting and to just, I guess, get your message out there, not just going and like having meet and greets or whatever they do, where they actually get to interact with their voters. It's like online is also, being online is just also very important in today's day and age.
Right, and maybe in the, I agree that in the general elections, that the vast majority of people are decided upon who they're going to vote for, regardless of any sort of campaign endeavors. But in primary elections, where it's within a particular party, I think definitely people don't really know who they're voting for, and at that point, the social media involvement matters tremendously.
Well, and then there's the point that we've had two, you know, in the past 2 decades, we've had two extremely close elections. I mean, first there was Bush versus Gore, which came down to just, I believe, less than 5,000 votes. And Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump, I think the minimum number of votes required to sway that was about 20,000. So the thing is, you know, these campaigns have so much money that even if you're only swaying a few thousand people, it really can be worth it.
Yeah, when back in this past election, in 2016, people, back to kind of like what we were talking about with the data breach, there was a point when it was like, oh, people, the ad was saying like, oh, she's going to win, like, no need in going to vote. I actually like knew people that thought that way, and it's like, they were like, oh, like, Trump isn't going to win, like, she's going to win by like a long shot, like, my vote doesn't matter, and it's like, it really does. Like, I feel like people don't understand how much their vote matters, and we just need to just keep encouraging people to vote, because like things can happen, and like we saw like that, no one was expecting it, and so we need to learn from like our mistakes. We need to go out and vote, and I think we also need regulations on our social media platforms for all these politicians, and I think we just need to get our life together a little bit.
Yeah, I think one good big point that we would probably think is common sense is you can't believe everything you see on the internet. You can't believe every ad you see. You can't believe all the posts that a politician sends out. And you need to check your facts. You need to actually do your own research and inform your vote so that you can what you're voting for actually matters.
Okay, well, I think that's all we have for today. Thank you for joining us.